Peace, party people. Welcome back to episode 109 of Where My Killer Tape At. We're going to be talking about capoeira and African liberation. This is going to be the first of many discussions. I probably have it with this gentleman that I'm bringing on board, Chikung, who also does capoeira, and he's also a digital marketer. So we're going to talk about a lot of things when it comes to capoeira and also, you know, black liberation or African liberation in our community today and how it looks like. So enjoy. Peace. Killer Tape At, B.
Peace, peace, party people. Welcome back to Where My Killer Tape At. I have a special, special show for y'all. For those of you that are into capoeira, this is going to be probably even a treat for you because it's a discussion that you rarely hear. And I got a fellow capoeirista that I haven't played yet by the name of his honorable name, of course, is Quajo Danzo. He is a digital marketer. And he's a capoeirista. And he goes by the name of Chikung, so we're going to call him Chikung, while we're on the show. He'll probably call me Travado or Dan, whichever one is good for him. How you doing, brother?
Indeed, I'm doing good, brother. Brother Travado, meu irmão.
Yes, yes.
And it's good to be here with you. You know, thanks for having me on the show.
Definitely, definitely. And we met via Instagram, and I know you, because I know you trained with, You train with Grupo Unidade, am I correct?
I formerly trained with Makulele, but
okay.
Those days are behind me now.
Cool.
I'm training with Eclipse Capoeira here in Atlanta.
Awesome. Because I found you through Grupo Unidade out of Alabama.
Word.
And then like we just started interacting and commenting on other people's pages, not our pages. And then I was like, I mean, we got to a heavy discussion in the comments, and I said, I got to bring him on the show. And then I went on a break, and then I was like, I got to bring him on. So I'm glad you came on.
I'm really glad to be here.
Definitely. So my first question, of course, is how did you come to capoeira?
So, I mean, you know, my capoeira journey started probably like most people's journeys and everything start really by accident, mm-hmm. you know, but it was someone else's accident.
Okay.
I was in, you know, college trying to learn breakdancing, and you know, it was rough, you know, because I was doing it by myself, doing it alone, trying to get all these moves, and I was like, you know, YouTube. And then a friend of mine came by, and she was like, you know, my best friend, she was like, yo, you know, I was looking for this, I forget what it was, I think she was looking for a samba class.
Oh wow.
She was like, or a salsa class, it was something. And then she was like, nah, I mean, but I found this capoeira class and that's not what I was looking for. But, you know, I've been doing it for a little bit and I think you'd really like it. So I started doing it. You know, I went to a class and showed up. And I was like, hey, I'm here to, you know, learn the sick tricks and get out so I can be a better breaker.
Okay.
And then, you know, 10 years later,
okay.
I'm still here doing capoeira.
Do you still b-boy?
Nah, not at all. Oh, okay. I mean, those days were so, it was really such like a brief episode, you know, like I'd wanted to break ever since, you know, I saw breaking, you know, I watched all the movies and I was like, mm-hmm. damn, you know, like, you know, it's so sick. But like, once I started doing capoeira, I really just kept that momentum.
That's dope.
Yeah. And
this is I've been doing capoeira for a minute and this is kind of like the first time I heard it was by accident. usually it's a video game or a movie, or they saw a demonstration and they said, I want to do it. This is the first time where I was like, I was doing this. And then I just stumbled upon that. That's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting that you say that. Cause, like, I mean, when I say it was an accident, yeah, I guess I never really thought of it like, you know, like how I describe it that way. But yeah, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to learn to do capoeira. Like, you know, I've been wanting to do this all my life. You know, I saw, like, I definitely played Tekken. I knew who Eddie Gordo was going into it. I'd seen these Latif Crowder movies or, you know, like other martial arts, you know, like Tony Jaa movies, you know, Undisputed. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that looks sick. You know, you see the capoeirista in there, Mortal Kombat back in the day. You see that movie.
Yep.
Like, you know, like I want to do that, but it wasn't a thing that like I ever knew the name of. So I didn't like know that I wanted to do it. I was just like, I want to be able to do that.
Wow.
And then I stumbled on this class and I was like, oh, you know, I went into it like, oh, you know, that's cool. But like, you know, dance fighting, blah, blah, blah. And then I stayed for a few more classes and I was like, okay, like, so it's more than just dance, you know, this is a viable martial art form. So I guess I'll stick around and learn a bit more. But the community was really cool. Obviously, the moves were really cool. And it was just like, oh, I was like, man, if I keep doing this, you know, I'm going to be able to do some really crazy things with my body. And, you know,
true indeed.
That was, yeah, that's what I wanted to get from breaking.
True indeed.
So, like, God, what was that? Plus martial arts. So
true indeed. True indeed. And because I still b-boy. So that's why I asked. Yeah. So that's why I asked.
Yeah. I've seen some of your material on the gram.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. You know? Thank you.
You got some moves. And between the moves and your music, you know, like, you got a pretty deep music knowledge, you know, from really, like, the golden age of, you know, like, hip-hop, you know, like, breaking music, coming right on the tail, like, you know, those, like, 80s breakers. So I was like, damn.
Yeah. I haven't been able to, like, shake it off. Like, everybody be like, oh, you, like, they'd be like, oh, you an OG. Like, because I try to b-boy, like, somebody in, like, 2010, and they'd be like, or 2015, and they'd be like, nah, you also... So trust me. Yeah. And there was another reason why I asked that. The reason why I asked that is because I did a program for the State Department for Next Level. And they look for hip hop artists. But what they're looking for is they're not looking for just any hip hop. They're looking for hip hop artists to do community work. So that's why when you was like b-boy, and I was like, I'm going to slide you the application, you know, boom. So I'm going to still slide you the application in case you know somebody in your community who does hip hop on any level. But they do community work. Indeed. But they got to do the key is they got to do community work. That's what they're looking for. Yeah. So
that's the only real work.
Indeed.
Community work.
Indeed.
I'm about it. You send it my way.
So my next question, you kind of answered, but I asked a lot of people this. Why capoeira instead of another martial art?
Capoeira?
Yeah, why capoeira instead of saying, you know, like, you know, taekwondo or wushu or why capoeira?
Yeah, man. I mean, that is a really good question. That's definitely something I've given a lot of thought to over the years. But, I mean, I guess the short answer, the long and short of it is, you know, like, you know, one of the first things you learn about capoeira when you start, really, no matter who you are, you know, I feel like, you know, people come off the street not really knowing, like, how to do capoeira, but, like, they've, like, heard of it. And it's like, oh, what have you heard about capoeira? You know, like, when I used to teach, I'd be like, oh, like...
Mm-hmm.
Capoeira, and they'd be like, oh, you know, it was created by, you know, like Brazilian slaves in Brazil to fight for their freedom. And I was like, ah, you know, like that was my introduction story. That's what I learned is the origin story of capoeira. And I was like, damn, that's what's up.
Chundi.
So it's an African martial art. You do it to music, you learn these cool moves, and it like, you know, kicks ass. Like, all right, you know, I'll stick around.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Like, that's pretty much, that was the rationale back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really only developed into the present. You know, like, I thought just as a martial art, I think it's, you get so much, right? There's so much value in it. You know, like, a lot of people think of it, oh, that's just kicks and you don't even touch each other. But, like, you know, it's hand strikes, elbow strikes, you know, like, any movement, really, that you've got in another martial art, you can make that happen in capoeira.
Yes.
Plus there's like movements in capoeira that you won't find anywhere else.
Yes.
So it's really round, like well-rounded.
It is. And you know, it's funny because like I've taken classes that like, you know, takedown classes. I've learned different things, like different, like not, I don't want to say forms, but different. Yeah. Different forms of capoeira that is not, you don't see in the general public. And I've had people come see me and they'd be like, that's not capoeira. And I'm like, yeah, it is. This is because they're used to seeing a particular, you know, flips and stuff like that. And I've talked to Brazilians. I've been like, hey, how come you guys X, Y, Z? And they'd be like, because Americans don't learn that. They want to learn teporada. They don't want to learn. And I'm like, for real? And they're like, yeah, they don't want to learn, you know, like takedowns. They want to learn the flips. They want to look flashy. They want to look. So we teach that because that's what they want. And I was like, wow, that blew my mind.
Indeed.
It blew my mind.
Indeed.
So another thing that like the reason why I wanted to talk to you too was because through our like comments on other people's pages, I was like, man, this brother's about Black liberation. So can you discuss your journey into Black liberation and practice?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's a really layered and loaded question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know you already know. Yeah. I don't really know how to like put it in a, I guess it's a journey formation.
Okay.
I guess like being in here, I've spent so much more time. And when I say in here, I mean like, I guess on the journey, mm-hmm. consciously, so much more time spending thinking about how to like, you know, essentially about this question of liberation and what it is.
Dude. Oh, bruh.
And like, yeah.
Trust me.
And it's complicated.
And I'm not asking you like, what is your philosophy? What should we be doing? Like, cause I think that's like, everybody has a different answer, but like, how did you get into it? Like, was it an accident? Yeah. Was it, were you raised? Was it, did somebody introduce you? Was it, you know what I'm saying? How did you start? Like,
I feel you. I mean, you know, I'm inclined to say that on some level it was an accident. You know, in the sense that really everything we do, you know, we can attribute some level of accident to it, you know, like, yeah. Like I think about, I mean, obviously, you know, I go back to my parents. I'm like, you know, both of my parents were from Ghana.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, yeah, they came here, had me and my sisters in Atlanta, and growing up, you know, I grew up in, actually it was weird because like, you know, in like elementary school, I didn't really fit in elementary school. And that was, you know, like growing up, going to elementary school in the 90s, the whole African booty scratcher phase, you know, people would be like, oh, you know, are you an ABS? And you'd be like, what's an ABS? And they'd be like, African booty scratcher. And they'd like, you know, they'd wild out. And it was so like, and that was elementary school. It was pretty uncomfortable, mm-hmm. you know, like it was hard to make friends. And, you know, it was for a couple of, you know, people would be like, man, your name is so mm-hmm. weird, right? But like, it also, growing up with like those parents or my parents, I didn't learn a whole lot of like American customs.
Gotcha.
And definitely not like Black American customs. So like, I was pretty out of the loop for a lot of stuff. But yeah, and then like middle school, high school, those happened. Mm-hmm. And you know, I went to both of those in like the white suburbs. And yeah, like my class, my high school class was actually, you know, from like middle school up, like part of this like most profound wave in like, I would call it the Africanization of Gwinnett County.
Mm.
You know, like that school district was super white until we came along.
Wow.
So like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like nice in that solidarity sense, but like, you know,
I was going to say, because like my partner, she's from Nigeria. So like when she came to the States, her dad lived in West Virginia. He was going to University of West Virginia. So she kind of like went through the same, like this, when she told the stories, I'd be like, oh my God, that's crazy. And it was in the 80s. So I was like, wow, that's bananas. You know what I'm saying? Like when she tells me the story. So when you're telling me, it's like bringing back all those stories that she's told, then I'm just like, I can't, like, I have four babies. So I like, I can't imagine, you know, and I'm not trying to like knock nobody. Cause you got, when you're an immigrant, you got to do what you got to do. You know what I mean? You want to keep your baby safe and you want them to get access to good education. But I just can't imagine like putting my babies through that, like that madness. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause it's madness. You know what I mean? And it does a number.
It really does
a number on your, not just your self-esteem, but your identity. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Yeah. Nah, that's super true. And that's, you know, that's part of what I mean about this whole like accident thing, you know, like as much as I'd like to be like, oh yeah, you know, I stepped into consciousness, you know, I dragged myself into consciousness. I feel like in a really big sense, that's kind of, you know, there's this whole capitalistic narrative and the whole bootstrap narrative. That's kind of like parallel, you know, because like there's any number of things that could have happened on my way here to where I am now, as far as what I know and what I believe and what I want to see out of the world, where like this one thing could have gone wrong and I just would have gone in the other direction, you know, instead of being like, oh, you know, like liberation for our people. That's, you know, like that's a priority that needs to happen. I would have been like, oh, you know, like, you know, fuck everyone, you know, like, but you know, I could have been like a self-hating black,
sure, you know, and don't get me wrong. Like, I hate to be this way because I came up with the idea that Ghana is like, I'm being straight up serious. I was raised with the idea that Ghana was like Wakanda. You know what I mean? And like, you know, Kwame Nkrumah, you know what I'm saying? Like oh, I man. Just learned, like, I just learned like a couple of years ago that Dave Chappelle's mom went to Ghana and she helped Kwame Nkrumah's government. Like, so I keep learning about, you know what I'm saying? Like, I keep hearing about all these people that was like, yo, you know, Ghana's where we need to be at. That's where we need to go. That's like where we need to be at. So it's like every time I meet a Ghanaian, I'm like, oh, Wakanda. Like, I'm even to this day, even though I know it's not true, even to this day, when somebody's like, yo, I'm from Ghana, I'm like, oh shit, Wakanda. You know what I mean? Like, so like I'm assuming that all of y'all, and I remember like the first, I'll never forget this. The first Ghanaian that I met. No, I take that back. He wasn't the first Ghanaian that I met, because I tried to date Ghanaian girls when I was in New York City. Dude that I met, like, oh, you read the Journey of the Songhai People? It was a textbook for me in Ghana. And I was like, what? I was like, are you crazy? Yeah. Like, you gotta be kidding me. So like, I think I'm over here thinking like, oh snap, now you're telling me you're Ghanaian. You was raising up, we was like, yo, you know, Kwame Nkrumah is you know, T'Challa. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And I know it's fucked up to be thinking that way.
I mean, you know, like, I kind of dig that, you know? Like, definitely, like, you know, like, the reality on the ground as far as, like, the material conditions in Ghana, as well as, like, you know, the mentalities, the dominant mentalities, you know, when it comes to even, like, Ghanaian self-identification versus, like, African self-identification versus, like, identifying with, like, you know, the diaspora. It's all... It's definitely not on Wakanda level. But like that aspirational, you're right. Cause like, as soon as you said you identified with Wakanda, I was like, well, you know, shit. Like if things had gone the way that Kwame Nkrumah was heading, like steering things, like if he hadn't been derailed, Ghana would be ridiculous. And right. Like that's the other thing, right? Cause if Ghana's ridiculous in that capacity, then everyone else he would have been working with, you know, Equatorial Guinea, you know, like Burkina Faso, you know, like, everyone, Egypt, the Congo, like it would just be a totally different story. Like all this technology that we have here in the States, let alone in like the rest of the West, that's all coming from like African resources.
Oh my God. Yes. Know? Yes.
So like, imagining a world, imagining an Africa, right? Where we have those Wakandan characteristics of like self-determination and like the capacity for self-defense and like, you know, like, the ability to negotiate and leverage like your own power to, you know, make deals, to broker deals that are actually in your favor. That I think it's something really important to hold on to, you know, like, as far as like maybe not, you know, replacing the reality with Wakanda, but recognizing the potential of Wakanda in, you know, the present reality, present situation.
And it's funny. And I didn't think about it like that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking like, I'm like super imagination, but I'm not thinking about the potentiality of what Ghana represents to a lot of people, particularly people in the diaspora. Right.
Yeah.
And I could, indeed, and the I, whole could, year I, could draw, I could like go on and on to my, like our connections to Ghana. I could go on and on and on and on and on to, you know, forever, you know, but I'm gonna go on to the next question. What are your influences when it comes to Black liberation thought? Like, what influences you?
Oh, man. Well, like you said, you know, I think being from Ghana had, like, a major part to do with it. I don't know what, like, role that played, but, like, right, so, like, you know, the whole high school thing. I would say like leaving high school kind of gave me the space, right? Leaving high school and like those people, like that environment, you know, of like white suburban Georgia kind of gave me the space to like grow into my African identity. You know, like, which is funny to say, like, for me to say that, like, hearing myself say that coming out of an African household, but, you know, that's just the power of, like, you know, the indoctrination. And like you're saying, you know, like, as a as an immigrant, you come to this country and you're like, man, you know, I want my kids to succeed at all costs, you know, so, like, it would suck if they had to go through, like, all this and this and this, but also, you know, like, they got to get a good education, you know, this is where we can afford to live, like, you know, this and that. So, like, college allowed me to come into my African identity, relating to other, like, really children, first generation, second generation African children. And then just like sharing stories with, like, you know, my diasporic, you know, African brothers and sisters, like here on the continent, like, or, you know, in the States, here in the city, you know, like Decatur. I'm in Decatur right now, Decatur, Atlanta, Decatur, Georgia. But yeah, like African or Ghanaian identity. That specifically, you know, I was like, oh, you know, Kwame Nkrumah was the man in the 60s. Like, oh, okay, him and like Patrice Lumumba. So, like, I'm not Congolese, but I am Ghanaian. And then you look at, like, you know, the rest of like Africa and growing up, there's all these stigmas, really hard stigmas associated with so many people. You know, people like, oh, there's endless conflict going on in the Congo and like Nigerians are corrupt, but like Ghana's cool. Yeah. And, you know, like, I heard that and I was like, that, you know, can't be. Right, there's got to be some corrupt Ghanaians and some conflict in the DRC. Like my mom, right? Like there was a coup in Ghana. She grew up like in the midst. She was like a preteen in the midst of that coup. It was bloody, you know. There was definitely conflict, but like society kind of puts this like, I mean, like you said, you know, looking at Ghana's Wakanda, like society definitely makes that comparison. So like, knowing that I was Ghanaian, that kind of helped, right? I feel like it helped encourage me to kind of like live up to the reputation. You know, like people know you're from Ghana, they're like, oh, okay, like,
yeah,
kind of expect,
something. That's how I know I shouldn't put that on so I was like, people, but that's like, I'd be like, oh, you can hang out, snap, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, my man, yo, you know what I'm saying? You know, and it didn't help. It didn't help that I had this really dope Ghanaian professor in college. Like, I had this really dope. He was dope fuck. Like, he had like I was like, when I become a professor, I want to be. He had these comebacks. And you would say something to you, you say something to him, and he would come back, and you'd be like, bro, like, man, that hurt. Like, I said, I want to be like that dude. So like, I assume every Ghanaian is like him. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I shouldn't do that. Like, you know what I'm saying? But you said something that I think is interesting when you went to college. And a lot of black folks in the diaspora, they went to most of them come into consciousness in college. You know what I mean? So so you're not like it's not like you're the only one. You're not an outlier. That actually happens to a lot of black folks, African folks around the diaspora, around the world. They go to college, get some new ideas, and they meet people and they're like, oh shit, I didn't know about this. So, which, you know, people like, you know, people like Kwame Nkrumah, like when he went to college, he was like, oh snap, I didn't know about this. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, really true. It's not, again, you're not an outlier. This is actually what goes on around the world, you know? So I think that's dope that you just proved that.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the whole, you know, like, again, part of the accident thing. You know, like, there's so much about my own story that resonate, right? Like, it can be replicated any number of times, right? And it often is, you know, like, for every, you know, black person. And I do, you know, full disclosure, I do prefer the term African, because, I mean, long story short, because this is a major part of, like, my worldview, but I feel that racial terminology, you know, as far, you know, we've been talking about like self-identification and how we see ourselves and how society sees us, racial language, like black and white, literally like black and white, and, you know, any other colors, red, yellow, that are ascribed to like people, those all come from like a system, right? English as a language is a colonized language, right? So like these words had meanings to the, you know, Europeans, right? The Christian Europeans, before they ever ascribed these words meanings to people. and right, especially black and white, like for hundreds of years before, you know, any European now white person was calling anyone, right, was calling themselves white or any African person black, they were using those words talk about good and evil. You know, they're using those words to talk about the soul, right? Heaven and hell, right? So like I think ultimately, and looking at how much work white people still have to do in order to understand themselves and their role in the whole racial paradigm.
And let me just say this. And I apologize. I did not know you was Ghanaian. So
go ahead.
I assume I'm dead serious. So I'll be dead on. I'll be like transparent. So like,
yeah,
you know, I wanted to say African liberation theology. I want to say African liberation thought and practice, but I was like, you know, maybe he's a diasporan African. So I'm going to say black liberation. So that's completely, totally my fault. And I apologize, not just to you, and I apologize to my audience, because I should have been better on that and known like, oh, damn, like, oh, he's Ghanaian. So, but I should still say African regardless, because you make a good point. You know, that's a very good point. So I should be saying African liberation thought and practice versus black liberation thought and practice. I got you 100%. Yeah. So I should have done my you know, my research. Word. That's on me. So.
No, I mean, it's all good. And I appreciate you. I mean, I know that's like, you know, it's a very touchy, it's a very sensitive subject for a lot of people, you know, so like the way I see it, even if I wasn't, you know, even if I was, ADOS or FBA, you know, African Descendants of Slaves or like Foundational Black Americans, as they call themselves, even if I was, I feel like all of them as well. And, you know, this kind of goes into your question about like my idols, right? Like, my influences in
Pan-Africanism,
I guess Pan-African ideology.
Okay,
You know, Kwame Ture. He was one of the big ones. And like his guy was Kwame Nkrumah, you know, like, and you know, they would go around, they'd be like, yo, you know, like we're not black, right? Like Kwame Ture, when he was Stokely Carmichael, he kind of like started the whole Black Power movement, but he quickly like turned into this whole, we are Africans, you know? And a lot of people don't know, but like, you know, because like I shared this idea, you know, I'm like, yo, we shouldn't call ourselves black. Like, we should call ourselves Africans. And people are like, why? And it's like, yo, you know, like, because like we can see, right? That's the thing. We can look at ourselves and be like, yo, we're black, you know, and that's good because black means rich soil and things grow out of rich soil. You know, like black means the night and it's nice and cool. It's half of day. Night isn't bad, right? But like, we can't take that self-identifier out of society, right? Like growing up and like, again, going to these suburban high schools, hearing white people talk about like, you know, you shouldn't eat the black banana. Yep. The black banana is bad. Or like, that
black jelly bean. Yeah. Like,
Or like, exactly. You know, like there's so many negative associations just like in language and the way they say it. You know that they might not be like intentionally, consciously thinking about black people, but you can hear their feelings about black people in the way they say black.
I mean, like,
right?
no, you're right. Because like, they'll say like even in just general descriptions, even like, you know, I was walking down the street and there was a guy in his red car. He was black. And you're like, what? You're like, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know,
exactly.
Even we do it. Exactly. We're like, yeah, he's black. You know, like, well, you know, like even we'll do it. And it's like, you're right. I agree 100%. Like, it, you know, even when they're not trying to be intentional to know how they come across it, you know, I agree. So.
Yep. Yeah. The indoctrination is real. It's deep. It's in there. You know, so like, you know, I'm like, how can we overcome this? Right. Because that's the whole, right. Because then we have to think about like, okay, how are those sentiments? How are we? Yeah. How are those sentiments manifesting?
And our babies, you know? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, the whole Dr. Amos Wilson is another one of mine. And
I'm gonna tell you, I'm dating myself.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, he had a shop in Harlem, 125th Street, and he used to talk, and he had speakers outside his. And at the time, I didn't know who he was. I just know that this guy's speaking through the speakers. Man. That's that. I'm dating myself, but the psychology of the black child. Dude. As a parent, that was so crucial in my parenting. Man. That was so crucial in my parenting. Yep, so very crucial, very crucial. Yep,
indeed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing stuff. Like the fact that more people don't know, like
yes,
who he is and his work. You know, like. We know all these people, and I guess this gets into this whole other question of like, you know, like, I guess more important than like, who are my like influences is like,
okay,
what is my relationship to their teachings? You know, because like anyone can be like, oh yeah, Amos Wilson was, you know, or like, oh, you know, Malcolm X, right? You see Malcolm X all everywhere. Like people love to listen and cite Malcolm X, but you know, there's like different stages of Malcolm X, you know, like.
Yeah,
his growth and evolution over the course of his whole career, even though he was saying spitting hot fire like the entire time, like the stuff he was saying, the substance that he was bringing to the table at the later end of his life was completely different, again, in substance, right? Like, I guess in context, with feeling, than the stuff he was saying when he was with the Nation of Islam, you know, and this isn't anything for or against the Nation of Islam, but it's just to say that, like, his perception, his mindset changed. Like people hardly give him any credit.
It's not even.
For that,
it's not
like,
even that.
And not again.
I think.
Give him
and I literally just talked to my mentor about this. There's a book called Reinvention of X by the late great Dr. Manny Marable, which I suggest everybody read. And in it, it shows how, for example, give you a good example. Oh my God, I can't believe her, I just lost her name. Anyway, there was a poet that we all know and love who passed away. She was living in Africa, right? Oh, gosh, what is her name? Maya Angelou.
Right.
And she was like, it was like,
Maya Angelou?
Yeah, she was in Ghana. She was like, Kwame Nkrumah.
Yeah, she was in
Kwame
Ghana.
Nkrumah, once again. And she was like, I'm never going back to the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
And who convinced her to go back? Malcolm. Malcolm was like, and she was like, you know what? I'm going. So, like, what Malcolm was doing was, the reason why he was going around and linking everybody up. He was linking everybody up. Like, you need to interact with this person. You need to interact with this organization. And he was putting together a Pan-Africanist, not just in the United States, but also around the world. He was putting a Pan-Africanist group of people together to pull their resources, really, really manifesting Marcus Garvey's vision and, like, really putting that together. But my point was that he was going up to people and saying, hey, we need you. And it was like, I'm answering the call. So there was something that he was saying to them I was making them change their lives to go and do whatever he was asking them to do, you know, on top of having the information. And that's because of his parents, again, because his parents, that little parents that kind of like put that in that the Nation of Islam helped him create the tools that he needed for that. But he always had it inside him. And that's why I like that book so much. He always had it inside him to do these things, you know. But at the same time, there was people that also influenced him, you know, that we always like, you know, tend to forget about, you know, Dr. John Henry Clark, who went to school with Kwame Nkrumah, right? That was his man's. That was his man's. And they were like, yo, Kwame Nkrumah studies. So it was like all these connections, like, my bad. I didn't go off on a tangent.
Reinvention of X by Revisiting
Dr. Manny Marable. Boom. I'm going to put a Pulitzer Prize for that. It's a thick book, but you're going to read it in like a week. It's like, you're like, that book reopened the assassination case. Because he names who kills him. He actually names the person that kills him. Tells you who he is. And he shows how the other guys were innocent. It's a really good book.
Wow.
That's the only book that uses Malcolm X's diary as a source. Yeah. Oh, no problem, man. No problem.
I appreciate that.
My next question is, why many instructors remove African liberation from capoeira? You know, they'll reference it. They'll say, yeah, you know, slaves, and then that's it. They'll just keep it moving.
Yeah, man. I mean, at the end of the day, I can only speak for... Or I guess at the end of the day, I can't speak for them. You know, I have plenty of ideas as to why it happens. And one of the things don't know. I guess I would kind of like liken it to break dancing again, you know, and this is like, you know, again, break dancing. So the experience that I had with the last group that I was training with, I mean, a large part of the reason we left, I left with a few other brothers and sister in the group because essentially, you know, like it came down to this question of like, hey, you know, we're bringing to your attention this issue of discrimination, you know, like racism, like sexism, like y'all are perpetuating this shit against people. You're going to acknowledge it or you're just going to keep doing it, you know, and pretend it's not happening. And I mean, push came to shove and they decided to do anything about it, right? Like, or rather, yeah, they decided to keep doing it and pretend they didn't know what was going on. And over the course of, right, I've been training with them for like 10 years. And over the course of those 10 years, they'd say things like, oh, you know, like racism in Brazil is not a thing, or like, you know, it's paradise, you know, like no one, you know, has any issues with these things, or like racism is like bad in Brazil, but it's not nearly as bad as it is here. And I'm like, you know, like, I've been around the block and I see some things here and I feel like racism in Brazil is just as bad. But like over the course of really this past couple of years, I came to know them a lot better in the sense that like, I was like, okay, so I understand what their angle is, right? And not necessarily intentional angle, but like, I came to understand that, you know, especially with this whole Bolsonaro thing, you know, they'd be like, oh yeah, Bolsonaro's the man. Like,
yeah. You know, yep. Pretty much. That's kind of like supporting Trump
here.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, who are these people? And then I came to understand that, like, you know, they're nice Brazilian people, but like their political, social orientation is very, very similar to that of like Southern conservative white American.
Yeah.
And not even Southern. And I was like, oh, like that whole framing, right? So it's like if, you know, like, you know, a Southern white conservative person takes breakdancing and like starts to go teach it in another country, you know, like what are they going to call it?
Yep.
They're going to call it
American.
Yeah. They're not going to call it African American, you know? They're going to be like, oh, yeah, this is like our thing. This is, we made this happen. So, I mean, I would say it's that, right? Like, it's not even to say that they would do it because they feel like they're going to get back at, like, all the African people by, like, taking away the Africanness. But because that national identity supersedes whatever struggle that anyone else who, like, helped forge it exists, you know? So, like, I think, you know, to answer your question, a lot, like probably the majority of the people who do it, you know, they do it with different levels of intention and malice, but like at the baseline, like a lot of people do it because now they see capoeira, right? Now that Brazil needs capoeira and has needed capoeira in order to really identify and develop a sense of national identity, capoeira to a lot of Brazilians has stopped being African. Yeah. You know, it stopped being Afro-Brazilian, and it's now just Brazilian. Yeah, and if you see it as Brazilian, you don't need to see it as something that involves any sort of struggle, right? Because if you're the type of person who sees Brazil and it's like, oh, that's just Brazil, just like America. If you see America and you don't see African America, you don't see Latino American, you don't see Native American, you just see America, that's because you're looking at America that doesn't have any problems. So you don't need liberation. You don't need the struggle. Mm-hmm. Same thing in Brazil.
And you know, because I noticed that, and I know that with capoeira Brazil, it has like, in the 20th century, it has a very complicated history in the 20th century, right? Getúlio Vargas was this fascist dictator, right? And he was like, oh, let's make this the national sport, right? Indeed. And the book yet has to be written on Bimba that... I love Bimba, and I know Bimba gets a bad rap. Actually, Bimba gets a bad rap. You know what I'm saying? Because he was very African. He was very, very African. Like, that brother was very, very African. But I kind of feel like he was trying to do something, and I think I kind of feel like he was used, you know? And he gets blamed for the Europeanization of capoeira by a lot of practitioners from his time because he got a lot of attention.
Right.
But Getúlio Vargas was a fascist, right? So it has that convoluted history that doesn't really translate to, you know, 2020, you know? So, yeah, so I get it 100%. Like, yeah, I agree. This, and you're right. It's very layered, complicated question that probably needs an entire two episodes of a podcast to get into it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to get your take on it, which is dope take. Yeah. You know, and actually what I love about your take is that you could, somebody could probably write a dissertation just from your take. Like they can do, you know, they get a whole PhD on that, you know, later it is. So thank you so much for that. Definitely. How is it?
I mean, I appreciate the
question. Go ahead.
And you know, like go ahead.
Okay.
I mean, I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah. But like, yo, I get, long story short, yeah, I appreciate like how knowledgeable you are. Not even just about the, you know, I was listening to your podcast. I've been listening to it for a few days and like, you know, a lot about a lot. Yeah. And it's just like really nice to be able to like, you know, cause I think about, you know, like when I'm in your position, a lot of times, like, hearing what people are saying, I'm like, oh man, like now I have to like take some time to process and like synthesize what they said, and then I can respond.
Like
you do it so naturally and like effortlessly. It's, and like, you know, like, I mean, yeah, thank you. Like listening back, like at what you're saying, I'm like, oh yeah, that's that's meaningful. You know, you're not just like saying stuff, like this makes sense. You actually like processed, you know, what I just said and like are making something out of it, you know. So like, and I think that's a pretty rare skill, very valuable skill. So, you know, it's
I'm gonna be honest with you, like your answer, enjoyable experience for me. Because I wrote a book on capoeira, and I've been wanting to write a like an updated one and doing a chapter on what we just discussed. Ooh. And I'm like, I don't even think I could do that right
now.
Like with your answer, like I'm like, I don't think I could, because it's so complicated. It's like mad complicated. Like I would have to travel to Brazil, sit down, like go through the, get a translator, get through the archives. Like, yo, like I gotta, you know, and I'm gonna get, I know I'm gonna get different answers. I probably get kicked in the face a couple of times. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, probably still could shoot at me. Like, yo, kill him. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm like, man, I don't even know if I want to open up that worms, you know? So definitely. Okay, we can try.
Well, I'll go down there with you. And, you know, we can kick some ass together. You know? Yeah. There is do or do not. There is no try. You know, we're just gonna go down there and be like water. We're either gonna fluff or crash. If we crash, we're gonna drown some motherfuckers. All right. You know, like, the way it is.
So, in your experience, how has your community responded to your school of capoeira? Like, approach capoeira. So you left your school.
You mean like,
you guys,
the,
like I don't know, you guys went to a different school,
like, as in like.
And then you seem like, again, I should have done my. You seem very community oriented. So you seems like, and the reason why I wanted to interview you, because it seemed like you approach capoeira like I do. Like it's community. It's for my community. It ain't really about me. It's for my community. So how is your capoeira journey? When somebody meets you on the street, like, oh, you do capoeira? How is their response has been?
Yeah, I mean, that's so as far as like what we just started,
okay,
you know, because like we haven't joined another group at the moment, but we have started an organization, and it's an African cultural arts organization. And yeah, you know, there's seven of us. Capoeira is the thing that we all have in common, so obviously it's like our main thing, you know, it's the thing that we focus on. And in general, I mean, I do think it's really, it's hard to say like how people feel about it, right? Because like we just started this organization, and you know, community building at its best is like beyond a lifetime investment. You know, it's a generational thing. You know, like, so like, as far as like that end of the parameter, I have no idea what it's going to look like or how people are going to receive it. But like in the short term, I would say, you know. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're teaching classes. We're teaching Zoom classes.
Cool.
We're Eclipse Capoeira Atlanta, by the way. You know, we're on Instagram, Facebook, and we're teaching Zoom capoeira classes. People jump in there. Most of the people in there are people we've known for a while, either people we've in the past or like
friends who just want to
train with
us,
stuff like that.
Definitely.
You're welcome to train with us anytime, by the way. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I mean, we're building that community with those kind of connections. But we're also going out, you know, like, we're volunteering at an urban farm, like, twice a month. And, yeah, it is really nice. We just did a forum, a virtual forum on Monday, our first forum, you know, since we formed as a group, that where we brought together, you know, like, one of our own capoeiristas who's like a really studied, really well-read like scholar on African history and capoeira history. And, you know, this a contra maestra who's also in the city, who's just also super engaged in the work of like community building, nation building, Pan-Africanism. And then a maestri in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Yeah. And he's working in Goma and like he's like on the border of like the DRC and Rwanda, you know, where like the conflict is hot, and he's developing a whole like social, he calls it social capoeira project, where like, yeah, like he takes capoeira, you know, like he's been there for 5 years. For the 8 years before that, he was in Haiti, like teaching like children who were like in get, you know, they were put into rival gangs and like, you know, raised to kill each other. Like he was rehabilitating children in that community. And before that, you know, he was like in his neighborhood in Rio, like that he grew up in, which was, you know, violent. And so it's, I would say, like, the best way I can answer your question right now is through the feedback we've received from like those kind of people who've worked with us so far, you know, not necessarily from our students, because like our students and the people who train with us, for the most part, they're like, yo, you know, like, I'm here to do class. Not really here for all that other stuff, which I get, you know, like you said earlier, you know, like here in the States, you know, people are really about the movements. They're really about the fancy stuff. They're really about like training for fitness. So they're not really about that capoeira, you know, like the community stuff, but like that is our orientation. It's like, we want to engage the community. We want to be present in the community and uplift. It takes more than just teaching a class or just doing a martial art, right? Like, people who invented capoeira, they didn't see capoeira as, this thing's going to be useful to fight people. Nah, like, and that's it, right? Capoeira for them was a manifestation of, like, their daily lives, you know? Like, the difference between capoeira and, like, culture and spirituality and science and art and all these things, you know, like food even. There was no different. It was all like, you know, the same domain of expression, right? Of existing. So that's what we're working towards. And so far, you know, like the people we've worked with, they're like, oh, you know, that's really cool. You know, it's really cool to meet like-minded people who are also on this mission of showing the world that capoeira is more than, you know, kicks and punches and like, you know, roughhousing.
No, you asked a question.
So I feel like you literally just answered my question.
The community is receptive, and I think that's I think that's amazing. I think that like the community sees you as a resource outside of, and what I mean by that, like you literally said it, like outside of capoeira, like that's part of liberation, like seeing yourselves as part of something bigger than that. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like you just said it. It's not just about the movements. Other people see it as the movements. Now the hard part is, I'm not going to lie to you, the hard part is convincing your students that there's a community component to capoeira. That's the hard part. And let me just say this, they will eventually come around. Trust me on that.
Yeah.
I literally have somebody right now, shout out to Avogado, who I was like, who's the most anti-community person ever. I got him to give my students jobs. Like, they did a job. Like, yo, yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And I'm like, and I remember, shout out to Contra Mesebundo. He was like, I don't create capoeiristas, I cultivate humans. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And that's the key. Like, I'm not saying that your student is going to be the best capoeirista in the world. You know what I mean? But he's going to feed people. He or she's going to feed people. And I think from capoeira, that's what I get. And I know that may sound grandiose to a lot of people out there that do capoeira. It may sound like, you know, a Disney movie, but that's what I say capoeira is. That's part of the liberation. You know what I mean? So, yes. So you answered my question. You literally answered my question, you know.
Yeah, so, that's super true.
The question that I really, because clearly you love capoeira, and you explain why you love capoeira, and it's like, it's embodied in you. Mm-hmm. And clearly your parents put that in you. So just shout out to your parents. You know what I mean? What advice would you give? There you go, mom and dad. They knew the time, right?
Yeah. Mom and dad.
So I'm a new capoeirista. I'm going to start, on Monday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What advice would you give me? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Honestly, I would probably say, you know, just watch this podcast. Listen to this podcast.
I'm on Stitcher. I'm on Apple Podcasts.
SoundCloud.
But what else are you on? I'm going to throw that wrench at you. I didn't exist. So what would you give a new practitioner?
I mean, like, really, you know, I would say a lot of the stuff really that you just said, you know, I mean, ideally. So I'm kind of wrestling between, right? Like, my own, I guess, to your earlier question, Pan-African consciousness has, right, obviously continued to develop over the course of, I would say, you know, starting capoeira, actually, to go back to that, is another, like, was another impetus. I was like, oh, shit, you know, I'm learning this African martial art, or, you know, Afro-Brazilian martial art. I can't fuck around and just, you know, like, continue to, like, maintain the status quo and, like, you know, do all this. And, you know, obviously I wasn't, like, there when I started capoeira. Like, I wasn't like, oh, you know, fuck the status quo. You know, white supremacy is everywhere. Capitalism is the root of all evil, you know, like, modern evil. I had to get there, you know. It was, so, like, as I've approached that point of, like, being more fervent in my Pan-African musings of liberation, my view on capoeira changed, right? And that includes, like, when I started teaching. You know, I started teaching capoeira formally in 2015. And, right, even from that point on, my views have changed. So, like, back in the day, I would have been like, you know, like, Jenga every day. Make sure you Jenga. So, yeah, I guess as far as the movements, because that's the kind of stuff that I said in the beginning. That's where I was focused. I was like, okay, if you're going to learn with me, you need to be able to move. Just Jenga. A few minutes a day, every day. As long as you do it every day, you're going to get the hang of it in no time.
Yeah.
You know, like, the kids in Brazil, like, we see them, like, you know,
every day,
skyrocket in their skills, you know, like, and it's because they train every day. And, yeah, and you don't necessarily have to train, like, for hours every day, although, you know, that won't hurt, you know, it's not going to make you worse, but, like, training capoeira every day, even if it's just for a few minutes, even if it's just Jenga in a small room, that'll do something. So as far as the movements, you know, I would say stuff like that. Just make sure you practice the movements, do breathing, focus on technique, you know, like, came from a really technique heavy group, and technique specific too. But really, like, all the stuff that you just said, you know, like, not training capoeiristas, like, if I'm a teacher, you know, and I'm not training capoeiristas, I'm training, like, I'm cultivating excellent human beings, then what I want from my students, like, honestly, is for them to show up and not want to be, like, you know, don't show up with the expectation of being the best capoeiristas in the world, right? Or don't be intimidated by, like, other capoeiristas you have, like, skills that are not your own, right? Like, everyone comes to the table with their own body, their own abilities, their own talents, their own strength, their own weaknesses. So show up being ready to be, as far as capoeira is concerned, the best capoeirista that you can be. You know, like, you know what you need to do in order to, like, get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
For me, it worked out really well if included in that is showing up to every class, you know, like, stretching, warming up, making sure you're taking care of yourself, but also making sure that, like, right, because I think the world of capoeira, there's a lot of machismo, that sexism, bravado, and obviously, you know, the whole racism, ableism, classism, like, all of these things manifest, and I think it's really easy to get carried away especially when, like, right, you go to a Bachisado and you see, like, all right, you just started. I mean, like you said, you're starting on Monday. So I'd be like, okay, like, there's going to be a Bachisado in, like, 4 months.
Oh,
you're
going to
get your first court. It's maybe in a year, yeah, or 2 years. You're going to get your first court, and you're going to see all these sick Capoeiristas there. And half of them, yeah. Not only are they going to be, like, intimidating, like, physically as far as, like, what they can do, but, like, given the nature of Capoeira, they're probably also going to be assholes to some, like, real significant extent, you know, like, hitting on, like, the students and, like, you know, like, trying to get students to pay for them and do, you know, things.
Yeah.
And it's like, exactly. And you got to make sure that, like, those aren't, well, I would say one, right? Like, if I'm in that setting, if I'm in that space where I'm hosting the Bachisado, I, as a teacher, have to make sure I'm cultivating a space that's going to allow people to be people, right? It's not going to make beginners begin, right? Because how do you know how do you really know you're a beginner capoeirista in a lot of circles? Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's because you can't play, you know, like, because all the game time is taken up. And yeah, there's, like, a time and a place, right? Like, it's important for the beginners to see older students, more experienced students playing, see how the game is supposed to develop. But, like, that's not an excuse to, you know, hog the hada. So, I mean, making sure we're cultivating that space, but also making sure that the students are taking away
exactly
what they need to take away. They're not taking away anything that's ultimately going to be harmful down the road, right? Like,
exactly,
perpetuating any of the behaviors.
No, I think
that's going to get in the way of them being a good person.
I didn't see that coming. Like, all that is like, you're looking at, like, the whole picture. I expected you to be like, oh, well, this, and you gave me, like, the whole picture. There's a lot of things that are intimidating, and I'm not going to, like, I don't always prepare my students for that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh man, I forgot to mention that. And you're right. There's a lot of things, Bachisados, encounters, that is very intimidating. And you're right. Some places are not safe, you know, for new Capoeirista. So yeah, I agree 100%. So any yes. No. You're right. No. You're right.
Yeah. And we have to know, like, who our students are. Sorry. But yeah, like, you know, like, the advice, the direct advice I would give to, like, a new, like, male student or male identified, you know, cisgendered male student versus a cisgendered female student.
Oh, yeah.
The advice might be the same, but the way I'm going to prepare them for certain situations is going to be different, you know? Actually, I would qualify that a bit in saying it's going to be different in the way it's not, like, you know, some people will be like, like, I have a, you know, I'm not going to worry about telling this man about all the sexism in Capoeira because it's not going to affect him. But I'm definitely going to tell this woman. Sorry, loud out here. But, like, that's not the way we need to do it either. Because, like, you know, like, who am I protecting the woman against? You know, like, probably against, like, some, or who am I advising her against or warning her against? Probably against a man who, when he started training Capoeira, no one told him about the sexism. So they allowed him to grow into perpetuating that sexism, right? So it's like, I should tell them the same thing, right? That's, I think, you know, broader thing about racism, sexism, all the isms and the ableisms. People have the idea.
Yeah. No, you're right.
The ism,
you're right.
The victim of
that,
the ism.
And that's language that I'm learning how to change. You know, because there's things that happen in my class that I didn't know were happening because I didn't train the men. Like, hey, y'all can't be doing that.
Right.
Like, you're right. You're right. 100% right. 100%. So, real quick, any last words before we go, before you social media contacts?
Boom. Man, I think, I mean, this has been great. This has been a really fun, like I said.
Oh, thank you.
Like,
thank you.
You're really
and
good.
And I definitely got to bring you back.
There's
a lot of things. There's a lot of things I wrote down. Discuss with him.
Yeah.
I got to discuss with
you.
I
appreciate you.
Like, for example, like your Bachisado name. We didn't get into that. We got to get into that some other time. Like, we got to talk about, like, a whole episode on Bachisado names. And, So, like, because I know, like, I would never give nobody that name. It's a dope name. But I will never give it because everybody's gonna come for you. Like, everybody's like, what? Like,
yeah.
Like, it is. I try not to give my students sick, like, gangster ass names. because I know that it sucks up for trouble. Like, wait, your name is what? Well, your name is Besoto? Like, what? Like what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
He's going like, oh, what?
I get
like,
it. Wait, yeah. It yeah, so, you got a Chikuma and Besoto in the same place. You know it's going down.
Yeah, you got, I got to take him out. I got to see him. Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man, he's you gotta test him. Test
and that's why I love the name.
Make it work for that name.
It's not like a gangster name.
Yeah.
So
what's Tramado?
It means stuck. Which when I first got the name, but it's kind of like my life. It's really a testament of my life. So what happened was when I got baptized by Mestre Amos from Grupo Sensala, and he's a very dirty capoeirista. Like he plays really dirty. Now, the original plan was. When I went to get baptized, right. It was going to be my two brothers. So I was like, all right, I'll get beat in front of my two brothers. They seen me get beat up before. I could get climbed by them. But no, my wife and my moms came. So I said, I cannot get beat up in front of them. So Mestre Amos is dirty. Man. Like he's elbows, eye pokes. Like he's real dirty. So I was like, he is not going to touch me. So when I just ran circles around him.
And then you weren't going to let him.
So when they was like, it was so many capoeiristas, they was like, y'all been in there too long, y'all got to get out.
Get him.
So I gave Mr. House the handshake. I wasn't going to hug him. I didn't get baptized. Mr. Kashi, at the time, he was a professor. Mr. Kashi was like, nah, time is up. You got to get out. So I didn't get beat up. So when they were giving out names, they were like, when it came to me, everybody got quiet. They was like, what name we go? And then somebody in the crowd said Tramado, and everybody laughed. And I was like, what the fuck? And they gave me that name. So I asked, like, what does that mean? And they said, it means stuck because you never got beat up. So you never really got baptized. So you're stuck. So I was like, you're stuck in between two worlds. And I was just like, I hate that name.
Get it.
Because everybody else was getting these cool names. And I was like, I want a cool name too. And it was like, nah, you get that name. So at first I didn't like it. But then as I got older, you know, and I learned, you know, going back to how I came up, like I grew up in the projects, like my friends were like really thugged out. But I didn't involve myself in that stuff. I hung out with them. And you know, I kept my foot in the books. So I kept my foot in the books, but I hung out with them so nobody would mess with me. So I was kind of stuck in between two worlds. You know, even before I became a scholar, I was a not informal scholar. Like I did all my studying through African Center Scholar. And then later on, I went to academia, but I was stuck in between those worlds for that time. So I kind of like that name. They actually tried to change my name a couple years ago, but I was like, wow. So I don't want to like it really. There you go. So that's my name. And I like it because instead of people saying, like if my name was Besoto, everybody trying to kill me. You know, Tramado, they're like, just like how you was like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? So it was never, no one's trying to kick my ass. So it actually works out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's part of the Manjinga, the Malantaji.
Episode on name.
So the game, you know, the name
talk,
is in there.
We'll talk. So that's what is, dog. How can people get in contact with you?
So I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I mean, I thought those are the big ones. WhatsApp. Handle Chikum, T-I-C-U-M _ Capoeira. C-A-P-O-E-I-R-A.
And I'm going to put that in the show notes, so if they missed it, everybody's going to be in the show notes so they can find it. Again, thank you for coming on. This was a dope discussion. Like this, I'm gonna definitely say this is probably one of my favorite episodes ever. Like I'm being dead serious, like, because everything I want to talk about when it comes to capoeira is in this one, you know what I mean? And shout out to my homie Misty who trains with Mestre Amen. She's like, you should have more capoeira episodes, and I'm like, I'm gonna do it, and this one she's definitely gonna love this one, and this is dope. So this hopefully somebody uses as a part of their paper. So thank you, man. Yes, sir.
That's what's up, dude. Well, it's been an honor to be here. I'm glad we were able to make this happen. And definitely look forward to, I mean, whether or not I'm on your show in the future, definitely look forward to tuning into future podcasts.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, man. You got a great thing going here. Listeners, keep listening. Support this man, Brother Danny. because, you know, he's lit. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about.
Definitely. And when COVID is over, we definitely will link up.
I'm looking forward to coming back.
Because I got a lot of family. To, my partner just did a she did a flag for a all-black gun club. Yeah, down there in Atlanta. So, yeah. I got a homie down there, so I'm supposed to go down there hiking with him, and we're gonna do some knife fighting. So yeah, so we're gonna definitely link up. Yeah. So yeah. Woo. Yes, sir. Dayton, Ohio. Yep. But yeah. Oh. So
yeah, I seen you with the car.
Definitely. So.
And you're in Dayton.
That'd be so tall. So all right, man. Thanks a lot.
I'm gonna come up there as well. You.
All right. Peace.
Make it a thing.
Well, party people, thank you for coming to another episode of Where My Killer Tape At. Again, if you want to contact me any old way, you can go to the website, and that is Omis Bench, BENCH.com. There you have all my contact information that you need. If you want to book me for a panel discussion or on your show, whatever, we can always discuss terms. You can email me at DanTresOmi, DanTresOmi, at OmisBench.com. To this continue discussion online, definitely use the hashtag Where My Killer Tape At, and killer spelled K-I-L-L-A. Please definitely have a discussion on Twitter or Instagram, and just, you know, at me when you can. You can find me on the Twitters, of course, at Dan Trezomi, or also the official Twitter of the show is at Omis Podcast, O-M-I-S Podcast. Definitely thank y'all so much for coming through. I really appreciate y'all. And also on the show notes, I'm going to put in the link if you want to buy a coffee mug to support the show. I would deeply, deeply appreciate it. It will make a great present for your loved one if you like to drink coffee or tea, or if you would like to drink wine. There it is for you. Thanks, party people, and peace.